produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen to the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. Today is Health and Wellness Day here on the Audio Stash. After breaking news, we'll hear our first Garden of Wellness segment, looking into topics on marijuana smokers' physical health. Also, an interview with Pot TV's Richard Cowan about the international politics of marijuana. Mythbusters debunks another urban legend, and music on the program features Blue Mountain with a chill Wednesday's tune. Normal's Audio Stash, able to bring you some of the best music in podcasting. Our weekly segment on cannabis and mental health, Insight, begins today along with our hemp technology reports, all here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. First up today, it's news from Normal. Our news today from Juneau, Alaska, ACLU files lawsuit to protect privacy rights. The American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska filed a state constitutional challenge to a newly enacted law criminalizing adults' possession of small amounts of marijuana in the privacy of their homes. The ACLU of Alaska's lawsuit seeks an immediate court order blocking enforcement of the law and an eventual ruling permanently striking down the legislation as unconstitutional. Quote, "With the stroke of a pen, the governor has signed away Alaskans' right to be free from unwarranted government intrusion into the home," close quote. That's a quote from Michael McLeod Ball, executive director of the ACLU of Alaska, on the ACLU's website. He continued, quote, "This legislation is an end run around the Constitution, and we intend to put a stop to it," close quote. The legislation, House Bill 149, signed on Friday by Governor Frank Murkowski, violates the state's constitution's privacy protections and contradicts long-standing legal precedent, according to the ACLU. The Alaska Supreme Court ruled in 1975 in Raven versus the state that possession of small amounts of marijuana in one's home is protected by the state's constitution's privacy provision, a decision repeatedly affirmed by Alaskan courts, most recently in 2004. More information about this story is up on our website, normalaudiostash.com. Welcome to Normal's Daily Audio Stash. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. We've assembled another spectacular audio magazine for you today. Consider a donation or joining Normal at normal.org. Wednesday here on the Audio Stash focuses on marijuana smokers' health. Let's get to our first segment, The Garden of Wellness. Welcome to The Garden of Wellness. This is our weekly series about marijuana smokers' physical health. We'll take a look at the official science behind vaporization. It's a technique used for smoking marijuana that studies show cuts the risk of inhaled carcinogens. Now, most of us are familiar with the time-honored methods of smoking cannabis.
Ooh, a doobie!
Now that's the sound of a volcano vaporizer, and if you've never seen one, it looks like a crock pot with a clear kitchen trash bag where the lid should be.
As the heat builds up, the bag fills with vaporized marijuana, a neat kind of show in itself. Then you take the bag off and inhale what's inside. Recent science tells us that this method, while not as handy as your protopipe or a pinner in your pack there, actually is a healthier way to consume cannabis.
It's vaporization. And that is a process whereby individuals heat the psychoactive constituents in marijuana, such as THC, and then inhale the vapor, but they do not heat up to the point of burning the surrounding matter, and that is the matter which contains most of the carcinogens in cannabis smoke.
That was Paul Armentano talking about marijuana and smokers' health earlier this year, specifically regarding lung cancer. One of the biggest myths surrounding smoking marijuana is the potential health effects. And as science now delves further into the chemistry and physiology of cannabis, the results truly are surprising.
I don't want to imply that the studies give marijuana smokers a clean bill of health here, but unlike the large body of evidence and data that we have now showing alcohol and tobacco use being causal factors in certain cancers, we do not have that same kind of data for marijuana.
Now, study after study reveals no detraction from health, but indeed, in many groups of cannabis consumers studied, there are some who seem to have directly benefited from moderate lifetime use and even perhaps avoided things like lung cancer.
In fact, there were two large population-controlled studies done looking at that in 2005. Neither one of them found any sort of association between early marijuana use and early onset of those types of cancers.
Of today, carefully control temperature and speed of heat. Vaporization not only offers a scientifically proven technique for delivering a cleaner form of marijuana smoke, but it can also deliver set doses of THC to patients who need to closely monitor their intake. To me, though, and I'll be honest here, there's nothing like the experience of that freshly rolled joint, weighty in one's fingers, ready to smoke, healthy in moderation. This has been Garden of Wellness here on the Audio Stash. Next week, part one in our series about alcohol. Stay tuned, there's more to come here on your Daily Stash. We've got links to the volcano up at normalaudiostash.com. Now let's get to our daily interview. Today we'll hear from Richard Cowan of Pot TV. Richard is one of the foremost experts on international marijuana policy. We caught up with him in San Francisco.
Americans tend to forget that the drug war is going on around the world and has a major impact on other countries in very different ways. And there will be one of the people on the panel is Philippe Lucas, who's from Victoria, British Columbia, on Vancouver Island, and he has the Compassion Society there. But he'll be talking primarily about Canada's attempt to come up with a medical marijuana program that's workable, and slowly they are. But this is here's a guy who really is very knowledgeable about the interaction between prohibition and how the medical marijuana laws and prohibition conflict, and how you try to get the sick people put first as opposed to, you know, the prohibition being put first. And even in Canada, where they are very busy patting themselves on the back, the fact of the matter is that they've managed to give 1,000 people exemption in the whole country, and there are 3,000 members of the Compassion Society in Vancouver alone. So they give you an idea of how far behind in terms of really meeting patient needs are in Canada. And they are very, very big on congratulating themselves. And they are further along, certainly, than most places in the world. But in most places in the world, medical marijuana is simply not a viable concept. And this is particularly, I mean, all of the developing world, people can't even afford an aspirin, much less you have the idea that they're going to go see a doctor and the doctor is going to diagnose them with some disease and then tell them that they then can apply to the government to get an exemption from the American-imposed marijuana prohibition. That isn't going to work.
Well, but as an international part of it, how much has marijuana been part of, say, like the local healing culture? What, you know, buying an aspirin, but something maybe you go to the local healer for?
Well, of course, all of this is something that still goes on in a lot of the world in terms of people do illegally medicate with cannabis, and they use it in religious ways, for example, in India. But the fact of the matter is that when in Africa, to take an example there, where you have the huge problem of AIDS, and most of the people there simply could not get access to the antivirals. There's been the last couple of years, there's a big increase in the use of antivirals in Africa, but maybe 10% of the people who need it get it. But of the people who get antivirals, probably 40% of them need cannabis to deal with the side effects of the antivirals. And most of the people could benefit from simply the appetite enhancement and the other aspects of cannabis. There are people that I know in the United States who have used very little other than cannabis for dealing with full-blown AIDS and are long-term survivors. So, the idea, though, the point here is that marijuana prohibition has an impact outside the United States that is in many ways more severe and more damaging to the societies there than it is in the United States. And Mexico is, of course, is another example of this, where right now everybody's talking about the border problems and what's going to happen in Mexico, but ignoring the drug war's impact on Mexico, where being a policeman in Nuevo Laredo is not quite as bad as being a policeman in Baghdad, but it is, the chief of police the other day, who was the fourth one to hold that office in quite some time, resigned for reasons of health.
Well, I live in New Mexico, actually. Mm-hmm. I live in Santa Fe. There is a sense of the drug war's link to Mexico. There is that link there, and they are assigning law enforcement more to the south. There's a huge buildup on the border. But it's quiet as well, and I think that's what's interesting, is that some border states like New Mexico, where there's not a lot going on, and on the local news you hear about these things, there is some play about it, but it doesn't get out of the place.
I mean, the border areas other than Southern California and the immediate area around Phoenix are Tucson are fairly sparsely inhabited. El Paso on the Texas border, which of course actually comes up to New Mexico, you have people who are, not. I think the frustration of people like Governor Richardson and the governor of Arizona is that they simply cannot communicate to the rest of the country what it is like for the people who live on the border. And so that this is a sort of out of sight, out of mind. It doesn't make good television. But the fact of the matter is, when you read that, for example, in Arizona alone, they've arrested 500,000 illegals in 1 year's time, and then they estimate that there are 1 million or so that cross each year. Oh, yeah, they catch 1 in 2, 1 in 3. Not very likely.
Yeah, but then we also get the media play when we have the Minutemen camped out in Columbus, New Mexico. Talk about a small town.
Yes.
But when the Minutemen go down with their night vision goggles and play army camp and call each other lieutenant and general, there are the cameras, there's the news,
The Minutemen are also up on the Canadian border now. And this is one of the things, by the way, watch for this. When this comes out, when they do something on immigration and the border, that the senators from the states on the Canadian borders will be demanding their share of the goodies. And so that we will be pumping money into Washington State because there are a lot of votes in Seattle and maybe a little bit in Montana, but there are not that many votes in Montana, so to hell with them. And but we will put an emphasis on things on the Canadian border, which will, of course, be to protect Americans against B.C. Bud. But I think that one of the things that should have been a clue to people about this, what was going on, and the fact that there were serious problems in Mexico, is you look and see where John Walters, our beloved infallible drug czar, has been paying all of his attention. Has he been down on the Mexican border saying, oh, no, we've got tons and tons of marijuana coming in every day from Mexico, and Mexico's the leading supplier of heroin, Mexico's the leading supplier of cocaine, now Mexico's becoming the leading supplier of methamphetamine? No, he's up in Canada saying, BC Bud is 30 times stronger than it used to be. Back in the 60s, we all thought it was harmless, and that, you know, this is a really serious problem because we have more children in treatment for BC Bud than we have for alcohol and heroin and television, and so we've got to do something about this Canadian border because we've got all this problem with BC Bud. And don't pay any attention to Mexico. That's a pretty good clue that you ought to be looking to sound.
Thanks to Richard Cowan of Pot TV for taking time to speak with us here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Next up, let's do some busting of our own, folks, with our next segment, Mythbusters. Faster than a federal agent, quicker than Dick Cheney's shotgun, it's Mythbusters. This week on Mythbusters, we'll look at the following question. Is marijuana more potent than 30 years ago? In recent years, U.S. drug czar John Walters and other anti-drug officials have alleged that today's marijuana is, on average, some, and this is quoting them, 30 times, close quote, more potent than the pot available in the 1960s and 70s. But is this true, folks? First, let's start by saying that the average potency of U.S. marijuana is between 4 and 5% THC. That's according to federal statistics. Now, that average is higher in some parts of Europe, like the Netherlands, of course. But in the EU, where meticulous records have been kept for many decades, a 2004 study stated that the average pot potency was no stronger. The overall strength of marijuana available in Europe has remained stable. That's despite claims from U.S. officials and lots of others that say it has increased significantly in recent years, and that's according to the study by the European Monitoring Center for Drugs and Drug Addiction. The study, which analyzed the potency of marijuana seized by police between 1995 and 2002, is the first ever European review of cannabis potency. Quote, there's no evidence of a significant increase in potency, close quote, authors determined. They continued, quote, today's report shows us that effective potency of cannabis in nearly all EU countries has remained quite stable for many years at around 6 to 8% THC, close quote. So the facts that are out there suggest that these claims by government officials, most recently repeated in the backward rhetoric in Alaska, are completely false. What may be true is that the style of marijuana culture here in the United States has become more refined and has more of the connoisseurship of Europe. The gorgeous, finely manicured, lovingly grown, crystally, sparkly buds of today are a far cry from the outdoor, unmanicured weed of the past. So, our first myth, is pot more potent than 30 years ago? Busted. Faster than a federal agent, quicker than Dick Cheney's shotgun, it's Mythbusters. Mythbusters every week here on the Audio Stash, folks. And now it's time for some Audio Stash music, a nice chill Wednesday tune from Blue Mountain.
this world of hurt and mistreating, break his chains of misery. Mary Jane, Mary Jane, I need you to keep me safe.
Daily Audio Stash with that track off the Hempilation 2 album. We'll also be featuring PodSafe independent artists on the program with music found at podshow.com. Next, it's time for a look into cannabis and mental health with our new segment, Insight. This week, we'll speak with Normal board member Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Welcome to Insight here on the Daily Audio Stash. This is our weekly segment about cannabis and mental health. Joining us today is Dr. Mitch Earlywine, author of Understanding Marijuana, and he's also on Normal's advisory board. We're going to discuss the topic of depression and marijuana. Welcome here to the Daily Audio Stash, Dr. Earlywine.
Pleasure to be here.
Now, there are many myths out there, but is there any evidence whatsoever of a link between cannabis and depression?
In truth, there are so many things that increase depression in the modern world, but marijuana is just not one of them. Anytime I talk about this, I want to emphasize that there are cognitive behavioral therapies for depression that really work wonders, that depression is really a common thing, that it's not something that people should be afraid of or necessarily ashamed about. But again, the causes of depression don't seem to involve marijuana at all, and I'm happy to elaborate on that with some of my own research.
Now, tell us about some of the most common factors in the causes of depression, Mitch.
Well, when you look at the rates of depression over a person's lifetime, women are about 25% risk for depression and men only 15%. And that right away ought to get you thinking, well, gee, some of the big social and economic things that have a big impact on women may be contributing to some of these depressive things. People who experience depression are often folks who've been victims of some kind of trauma, folks who have sort of a negative outlook on life anyway, folks who have substance abuse problems with hard drugs and are actually dependent, or folks who are medically ill and end up getting depressive symptoms as a result of things like cancer and AIDS and things along those lines.
It seems like there are a lot of environmental factors that can cause depression in humans. So often we see those drug commercials claiming that a single chemical is responsible and that their pill will take it all away.
I find that really disappointing, and every time I see one of those, I can feel my blood boil because, in fact, the talk therapies are more effective in the long run than antidepressant medication because you're less likely to relapse with talk therapy. When you learn new skills about how to do fun things and see the world differently, that lasts you a lot longer than taking a pill every single day, and the data really support that. I can't emphasize that enough.
And one final question for you today, Mitch. For those who are dealing with depression and looking for solutions, you mentioned talk therapy. What makes that so effective?
The cognitive behavioral therapies are really the best, and what it does is it alters the way you look at the world, but also gets you out there doing fun things. When you deal with depressed folks, a lot of times they're not doing anything that's particularly fun, and it makes perfect sense why they would be depressed. That's really the hallmark of it, but you know, a good relationship with a therapist is the beginning to how that stuff works.
Mitch, thanks so much for joining us here today on Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Always a pleasure.
Dr. Mitch Earlywine is author of the book Understanding Marijuana. We've got a link to it right up on our website, normalaudiostash.com. This has been Insight, our weekly look into cannabis and mental health. More information about cannabis and mental health is on Normal's website, norml.org. Check out our website, normalaudiostash.com, for more information regarding cannabis and mental health. Now let's take a look into some hemp technology with this report from independent radio producer Mike Mossy of World Technology Update. Henry Ford himself, folks, saw that hemp and not oil, not that black oil from the ground, was a solution for long-term energy.
In energy news, in light of the big business giveaway energy bill President Bush recently signed that contains zero focus on increased energy efficiency, I feel it only appropriate to dispel the myths that the oil economy has forced on us for almost a century. Did you know that Henry Ford, one of the main inventors of the automobile and modern production techniques, built cars that ran on ethanol and hempanol? His Model T automobile was also constructed of resin-stiffened hemp fiber. Henry Ford knew about the natural, clean, renewable energy resources that the United States has at its disposal. Rudolf Diesel, the inventor of the diesel engine, designed it to run on vegetable and seed oils like hemp and peanut oil. Ford was quoted as saying, "There's enough alcohol in 1 year's yield of an acre of potatoes to drive the machinery necessary to cultivate the fields for 100 years. These are the facts. There is no energy shortage. The fact is, hempanol burns cleanly and does not contribute to global warming. Farming 6% of the continental U.S. acreage with a variety of biomass crops would provide all of America's energy needs. I find it interesting and suspect that the plant, even strains that do not contain the drug THC and its cultivation, became illegal around the same time that petroleum forced Henry Ford's renewable fuels out of America." As always, you can learn more by visiting worldtechnologyupdate.com.
And thanks to Mike Mossy for that report. We've got links to World Technology Update up at normalaudiostash.com. You've been listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. A big thanks to Richard Cowan of Pot TV, Mitch Earlywine, Normal Board of Directors member, and Mike Mossy, independent producer of WorldTechnologyUpdate.com, for contributing to today's show. Thanks to Podshow.com for all the amazing PodSafe music. We featured Carne Cruda in today's theme. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. Thanks to Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow.
podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.